also famously fickle in its punctuality. It is remarkably late this year, which works well for a beautiful springtime Easter Sunday. But it doesn't always happen this way. It's just the nature of Lent. It seems to come in its own time. Via Easter, via Passover, via some lunar calendar, via some formula that nobody understands, and I am not one of them, the timing just seems arbitrary. And so perhaps entering into Lent on the day when clocks lie has a kind of poetic symmetry to it. Not only are we entering into new seasons in more ways than one, but we are also simultaneously observing two different kinds of calendar breakdown. The difference is that even though once you've got your clock set right, Lent still won't get any easier. By this time on Tuesday, the daylight savings disorientation will have worn off, but the Lenten one will be just beginning. In a world run by clocks and calendars, Lent seems to be completely out of time. Advent, at least, seems to make some sense. It's the end of the year. It fits in this perfect little hole between Thanksgiving and Christmas. The decorations come out. Santa takes over the food court. The carols take over the airwaves. You may or may not like it, but Advent is on the calendar. Lent, on the other hand, nobody's out singing Lenten carols in the cul-de-sacs. ABC isn't running Lenten family specials all month. Nobody on my block has put up their Lenten decorations, and I live with seminary students. It would seem that Lent is thrust upon us with no calendar support whatsoever. It would seem that we have to do it for ourselves. To some extent, I think this is what Lenten discipline is about. Whether you give up chocolate or wine or Facebook, discipline becomes a way of claiming that this season is somehow different, that this time of year is distinct from the mechanical clockwork schedule that runs the rest of our lives. We have to carve Lent out of our own calendars. A daily meditation, a weekly service, some insistence that we will fight off the regularity of the outside world and make Lent happen. Like an exercise plan or one of those fast-track methods for learning a foreign language. Get ready for the resurrection in 15 minutes a day. I have, on occasion, taken up a Lenten discipline. For several years, I gave up caffeine, and we should all be very grateful that no such foolish thought entered my head this year. Instead, I, with Cindy and Brian and Mark, are setting aside a Lent for a particular kind of study. During Lent, we will be preaching and singing and studying the Psalms. It is a kind of foolhardy task. We have 6 weeks and 150 Psalms, and clearly we'll barely scratch the surface even of the ones we select. Though we'll get a bit deeper in adult education, and I'd be foolish not to advertise. But this morning, partially because it seems so well to speak to the changing of the season, and partially because, in Maria's words, the beginning seems like a very good place to start, we are opening the Psalter to the first page, Psalm 1. Happy are those who delight in the law of the Lord, who meditate on his law day and night. They are like trees planted by streams of water, which yield their fruit in its season. There is a tradition in Christian monasticism of reciting the Psalms every day. Not just a few a day, no, reciting the entirety of the Psalms, all 150 of them, every day. The recitation of Psalms became central to how the monks understood the passage of time. Certain sections of the Psalter were associated with certain periods of the day, with certain moments of prayer, and the book became a kind of calendar in and of itself. As far as I know, the tradition is largely extinct. You can imagine it might be somewhat taxing. Blessed is the one who meditates on the law of the Lord day and night. But you can further imagine there might be some disconnect between this verse and what follows. They are like trees planted by streams water which yield their fruit in its season. Night-day meditation sounds exhausting, but at least it's an organized, controllable, clockwork kind of thing. But wildflowers, wild fruit, trees in the stream bed have seasons to be sure, but not clockwork. You wouldn't set your watch by the crocuses. They come in their own time, in their own season, the fruit in its season, quite beyond the reach of our own regular and patterned behavior. So we have two different kinds of time. The regular as clockwork existence we declare for ourselves, and the self-revealed season of God. God's time, to be given in a time, outside of the mechanical operation of our everyday existence. My time has not yet come, Jesus says to the disciples, but yours is already here. God's time by God's rules, ours, frankly, a lot more predictable. It's the one you set your watch by. I think this is how we think about Lent. We mark off some time on the calendar. It's our time, a month like any other month. And we set ourselves to the task of meditation. If not day and night, then with a discipline or with a sermon series or with something that marks these days as different, but ours. Given for our purpose, regimented to our task, and we do it knowing full well that God's time is not our time. We do it fully anticipating that God's fruit will come in its own season, not in ours. Not in any way beholden to our own expectations. We say that we live in a world of clockwork predictability, and God lives in the world beyond measure. Ash Wednesday, Palm Sunday, Easter, they have significance to be sure, but they're still arbitrary, still just remembrances, human occasions set aside in our own predictable calendar, a time apart, but still time like any other time. But we haven't read carefully, and to be frank, the translator has done us no favors. For all of the wild, naturalistic imagery of the tree planted by streams of water, there's actually design and intention everywhere. The Hebrew that we translate as streams of water is actually strongly connected to the verb to divide. This isn't a natural stream, and it's not the word used for stream most places in the Old Testament. This is an irrigation canal. It's a division from the main river carved with purpose, with what to bring water for agriculture. This water is not flowing where it will, but it's flowing with purpose. Just as the tree is planted with purpose, there is design and intention everywhere. I think it is tempting to think about human time as just such a canal, crafted, ever forward, predictable. I live by a canal, and the difference is striking, carved straight into the land. You could sharpen a ruler against its edge. It course, we are thrust into the future, pushed by water into territory beyond our control, grabbing for something to keep us moored into the present. I don't know what these currents look like for you. Regret, guilt, mourning, the painful presence of an anniversary that won't go away. These powerful anchors to the past. Anxiety, fear, dread, the violent terrors of the future. I don't know what they look like for you, but I know what they feel like for me, and I know enough to know the clocks might run by clockwork. But you and me, we're all over the place. We don't want it to sound this way. It puts time out of our control. It puts life out of our control. It calls our bluff. It makes us admit that we are stuck, broken, torn creatures, adrift in something that we did not make and over which we have no authority. It is a humbling thing to admit. But I am here with good news this morning. Because if our time is that unruly river, then surely God's time is manifest in the canal. Purpose built, its destination sure. The tree is God's tree, the fruit is God's fruit, the planting done not by our hands but by His. And if Lent is anything, it is this, a time out of our time. A time not just beyond the day in and the day out regularity of what we think we know, but a time beyond the tearing, beyond the stuck, beyond the messy stubbornness of our own past, and the unknowable terror of our own future. A time full instead of the certainty of what God has done in Jesus Christ. A time full of the inevitability of what God will do in the age to come. Lent is hard. It feels like the most irregular arbitrary thing that arrives out of nowhere. It would seem only barely to exist were it not for our own efforts in return, our own discipline, our own willingness to carve new time out of overstuffed calendars. But I tell you this morning, in all of creation, there is nothing less arbitrary. There is nothing more definite, there is nothing more purposeful than the season which is now upon us. We set our face to Jerusalem. We enter a season whose beginning could not be more certain, and whose direction could not be more purposeful. Here's the paradox. We do not know what life will bring between now and the 22nd of April. But on Good Friday, Jesus Christ will suffer and die for every one of us. Between now and then, nations may come undone, as we have seen in the weeks past. The world may shake and hurl itself against us, as we have watched in horror the news from Japan. By the 22nd of April, everything may look different. By the 23rd, by the 24th. But on Easter Sunday, you will wake up to an empty tomb, and the world will be different again, as it has always been. So, this Lent, set time aside. But not just minutes a day, carved out of overflowing and jam-packed schedules. This Lent, don't even worry about the time we like to think we live in. The predictable, the straight and narrow, the ever forward. What Lent offers can't be carved out in 15 minutes a day. Instead, this Lent set aside the time we actually live in. The times we actually live in, the eddies, the undercurrents, the rapids. despair